Katya, welcome to my podcast.
Hello, John. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so I want to start off with the genesis, or how you came up with the idea for the House of Ethics, which you are obviously the founder of. You described it previously as a COVID baby, I think, in one of your previous interviews. So could you explain a little bit how you got to that idea to founding this company, and what your previous background was, or did that influence you in creating this in any sort of way?
Well, this is a huge question. It's nearly an existential lifetime question.
Well, I always start with those.
Because you started with the biblical Genesis. So, but as you mentioned correctly, it's a COVID baby, because previously I was a professor at the Sorbonne. I have been teaching there for 12 years, information systems, which is quite useful, let's say, when you talk about AI ethics, in order to know the systems that you talk about and you apply ethics to. So that is the background I was having. And how did it happen? You know, ethics, John, ethics, we all are ethics. Ethics is life. Ethics is talking. Ethics is interconnecting. Ethics is actually who we are. So it is not something that just comes up like that and one day you wake up and you say, oh, I want to do ethics. No. When you lead a decent life, you help people out. And I think as a professor, you are always there for your students. You help them in their life. You guide them. You mentor them. So you are a little bit at the service of, if you do it right.
Do you look at it from a language perspective? Mostly because previously you were a linguistic professor. I mean, you taught at Sorbonne, I think, among others. So is that the angle from which you look at ethics and then just say, okay, I'm using ethics and I'm applying it to the field of artificial intelligence, let's say now?
Well, then let's start with the beginning. What is ethics? Ethics is an actionable philosophy. It belongs to the philosophical discipline. And when we talk about linguistics is not just about words. Linguistics is about communication, how we interrelate. So I think it is the most fundamental thing in life, especially for us humans. So you have linguistics, you have semantics, how you understand things, concepts, and then you have semiology, which means that what are the signs communicating? And of course, with ethics, it's fundamental to know about rhetoric, communication, because it is human. So, of course, it's not something that just once again popped up, but it is something that interconnects with everything we do. You are doing ethics right now. It's like le malade bourgeois gentilhomme. He was doing philosophy without, or medicine without knowing it. So we are doing ethics without knowing it. And I think one of the, and you were asking that previously, what was actually the motivator, the catalyst? Well, the catalyst was because I absolutely don't find ethics as an elitist discipline. I really think that everybody can talk about ethics.
Yeah, that's the swarm. But I think we'll talk about it later. But you briefly touched, that's the concept of swarm ethics, right?
No, it's for me the concept of ethics, swarm ethics.
Okay.
Ethics, okay. And also it's the concept of the original Aristotelian ethics. Mm-hmm. It's an ethics which is for people. And it's for the police, for everybody in the city. Mm-hmm. And what happened is that ethics had been hijacked by elites. And that's why also I decided to name the new company House of Ethics, not Academy of Ethics, Laboratory of Ethics, Institute of Ethics. It's a house. It is open to everybody. You don't need a degree to talk about ethics and to work at the House of Ethics. That's very important. It's accessible to everybody. And that's how it should be.
So what do you do at the House of Ethics?
Well, at the House of Ethics, we do several things. We do B2B work and B2C work. So for companies, we are doing consulting. We are designing frameworks for AI ethics literacy for programs that we are designing. We are helping people implement or companies implement their products in a legal and ethical framework. So that's what we do. But also on the mainstream track, we try to talk to people, to sensibilize people, to tell them if you use ChatGPT, be aware that all your data stays in the box. What gets in the box stays in the box. Don't hand over any confidential data. So you need to tell people, you need to inform people in order for them to make informed decisions, which is ethics.
But aren't we handing over confidential data automatically when we use ChatGPT?
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Right now, everything, all Riverside here, of course, everything is scraped and used to, even if they don't say it, Zoom, any video calling software, everything that lands in the cloud is used. Mm-hmm. And even if they promise us that they won't use it, of course they use it to train their AI models. Everybody's using that. So everything, once you are connected with your computer, you are exposed.
So when I was doing research, I was curious because I think, if I remember this correctly, please correct me if I'm wrong, I think you said that you do not use generative AI, like mm-hmm. large language models, mm-hmm. I don't want to say at all, but at the very least, not for content creation. Is that correct? And if that is correct, could you explain why?
Yes, that is absolutely correct, John. And when ChatGPT came out in November 2022, the House of Ethics was one of the very first to decline to use ChatGPT. And everybody was asking us, why are you doing that? You are retrograde. You are not going with the innovation. Why are you doing that?
Denying progress, yes.
Exactly. Yes. So yes. We are. And then I had to explain a lot where this decision came from. First mm-hmm. of all, as I told you, I know what IT programs or IT databases, data lakes, profiling, slicing, dicing. I have been working in that. So I know what the IT is about. And when I heard about transformational models, GPTs, mm-hmm. well, I knew exactly that it works on big data. They need to get their data from. And at that time, nobody was talking about stealing data, scraping the internet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I found it absolutely unethical to use a product what was built on stolen property. Mm-hmm. And at that time, nobody was really talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I don't eat a cake with stolen ingredients and that afterwards you sell. Mm-hmm. I'm not playing or being part of such a game. We are being very aware about it when we are talking about food. We say we don't buy bananas picked by children. So why shouldn't we be also very aware about IT programs we mm-hmm. use? And that was my explanation. And the second thing, for ethics, it's absolutely not appropriate to use any hallucinating or immature technology, which these tokenized models are. So it's absolutely not fit for our business.
So are you saying that you don't think, because you say hallucinate, so you think that those large language models are still not accurate or you cannot rely on them consistently?
Of course, they will never be accurate. That's the core.
Not even with the newest, ChatGPT 5.200 euros per month subscription.
Yeah.
Don't even think those are reliable?
No, of course not, John. That's the technology. It can't be reliable. It's tokenized.
And what do you mean by tokenized?
Well, tokenized, there are many, many courses and classes on the internet where you can mm-hmm. check what tokenization is. And I think that's fundamental. Tokenization, probabilistic tokenization, what these models are, even if you twist a little bit the temperatures and the parameters here and there, the fact is that these models have no semantic understanding. They just juggle and put everything together. And one time, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. That's why they make up citations, quotations, and especially in healthcare, they come up with completely new organs. We just heard about that. So it's extremely dangerous.
So I think what you're saying is that those large language models don't even know what language is, right? All they do is they just calculate the most probable outcome and then they give you an output, right? That's what you're referring to, right?
We call it language, but in...
Right, they don't have the concept of language.
No, of course not. It's even back in the 80s when Kasparov lost against IBM. Mm. Big Blue did not know what chess playing was.
Right.
It was just executing orders, and the orders, or let's say the scenario on which it was trained, which is important. So the training data is extremely important. And of course, they have no understanding. That's what John Searle with his Chinese Room was talking about. It sounds like if they are talking Chinese, but they don't understand or have the concept of what Chinese or a language is. And Chomsky says the same.
So one of the reasons why I was looking forward to this conversation is because you have a little bit more of a critical stance towards AI. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think you're against AI in general, but you're just critical when it comes to some issues like trust, data, safety, the ethical part, which I think is great because I think for you, ethics is not only a nice to have thing, you know, but it should be integral to the programs and the software or the AI software that we're building. And so let's talk a little bit more about the broader picture. What do you think right now, how important do you think ethics is for, let's say, the big players or not even just the companies that are involved in creating AI software?
Well, I think as we heard Sam Altman when he said we have to bake in ethics, ethics is not a topping that you just put on top of your model. It is something that's not baked in, it's embedded. It needs to be designed in because into the process. And that's absolutely not the approach any of the big tech companies have, be it Microsoft, IBM, Apple, Amazon, Anthropic, Mistral, everybody. So why is ethics important? As you said, I'm absolutely not against technology. I was, even in the 80s, when I was working in New York, I was one of the first database managers at Booz Allen and Hamilton, which is like a big competitor to McKinsey. Mm-hmm. I'm a very tech-oriented person. But, and that's the but, what I don't like are the narratives. And these narratives by big tech who use false information to lead their business in order to infiltrate their systems into our workflows, into our daily lives, I think we need people to correct them, to say, this is not how it is, especially now when OpenAI again is talking about open models. They are not open. An open model is when you also put transparency on the training data, what they don't do. Mistral doesn't do it either. They call it open models. Arthur Mensch, he always said, well, this is business confidential information. We cannot talk about our training data because it's scraped. Mm-hmm. So you see, and that's, I think, one of the missions of ethics. Like for you journalists, you need to ask questions. You need to bring up the truth amongst all these narratives that sometimes mislead or distort what the product really is about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of the problem for these big companies is that, well, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, no matter how mission-driven they say that they are, and you know, let's be realistic. At the end of the day, what matters most is that the shareholders are happy, right? Or that the people, you know, that the income is there. And, you know, through history, I feel like ethics is a lot of times it's happens to be in the way sometimes. Let's put it, you know, that's the best way I can put it. It happens to be in the way sometimes of that, right? So how do you align? Because I think you used the word alignment a lot, I think, when I listened to your previous recordings. So how do we align the ethical component with the mission-driven opponent and, of course, the money-making component, I guess?
Well, I think that because there we need a switch. Right now, all these billions and billions that are poured into new models like the thinking machines now from Miramurati, 2 billion, we haven't even seen the product. Mm-hmm. So venture capitalists, they just business angels just invest into anything that has a name mm-hmm. on it. And I think it's certainly not coming from the funding parts, like you said, the stakeholders. It will not come from the engineers themselves, because they mm-hmm. all belong to a small, narrow family. They mm-hmm. all come either from Google, from Facebook. But I think, John, and this is important, and that's where ethics is important. It will come from the end user. It will come from us all. It will come because at one moment we will say, stop. This is enough. You cannot just thrive and build profits on our belongings, which is our data. Lawsuits are piling up in courtrooms because of that. Mm-hmm. The creative economy is saying stop. The journalists are saying stop. So, and the users, they feel it right now that something is off.
But isn't this, for example, for ChatGPT, isn't that somewhere in the terms and condition part where they say in very small letters, we will take all your... I mean, this has been a problem forever. I know, you know, I've always told people, I was like, do you know why Facebook is free, right? Like, that was right in the beginning. It is free because you actually agreed to this somewhere, you know, when you mm-hmm. registered, you told them you can just have everything, all my data, and then use it to sell it to advertisers. So isn't this a problem that already exists in this tech model since like Facebook? So it seems to you have more faith in humanity, I guess, than I do at this point.
I do. I absolutely do. Otherwise, I wouldn't do anything of what I'm doing. But who, like you correctly said, John, who reads the terms of...
Nobody
reads them. And that's actually what all these big companies are speculating on. And
nobody, that's how they're protected from lawsuits.
Exactly. That's it. But, and that's why I say again, that's why we need journalism. That's why we need ethics to inform, to say, be careful. This is actually what it means if you tick this little window here. Mm-hmm. You agree on, look what happened just a week ago with all the private conversations from Meta AI. Was mm-hmm. all publicly available because they clicked the share button.
Right.
They did not know what this share meant. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you just click it like you click pop-ups, boop, boop, boop. And share, you don't even ask with whom, but you just click it in order to eliminate that window from your screen mm-hmm. with, of course, devastating consequences. And now that we found out that all the ChatGPT private conversations by lawyers, by doctors were exposed on the internet again.
Yeah.
This needs to stop. Mm-hmm. This absolutely needs to stop. And they get away with it all the time.
But I don't think, but isn't at the end of the day, the people in charge of these big companies that have to make this switch? And I guess my question is, how do we make them change this?
Not via bona fide. That doesn't work. All these... we were talking recently about the codex or the code of best of good behavior, the code of the call of Rome, and they sign all these things and they comply mm-hmm. freely to it. They are absolutely not complying. They are just signing.
Right.
So I think it's not going to come from the big players, but because once you have money, once you have power, you don't give it away.
Mm-hmm.
You fight for it
mm-hmm.
and you try to circumvent anything that blocks you. Mm-hmm. Microsoft, they have 3,000 lawyers order to keep them complied to the AI Act. But it's not compliance. I think it's How can you circumvent it,
Well,
navigate the gray zones too?
right, because you mentioned the AI, I guess you're referring to the EU AI Act, right?
Absolutely,
But that
yes.
is, but for them, I suppose that's only an issue in the European Union, right? Because in the US, there aren't really any relevant
Oh,
privacy
yes,
laws, right?
absolutely.
So are they? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the OpenAI released an image programming Sora or something platform, and initially they didn't launch it in Europe because it was way too much of a hassle because of the GDP and the EU AI Act. So how do you see that difference, I guess, in terms of privacy expectations in Europe and the US? Do you see that there is a difference?
Oh yes, of course there is a difference. Unfortunately, there is a difference because if you launch a car without brakes and without lights on the market, it shouldn't be driven. And then we need to have controls. We need to have norms. We need to have standards. And if everything is in a laissez-aller, we are not talking about risks anymore. We are talking about damage. We are talking about harms. We are talking about violations and eventually death.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I'm not saying this is my opinion, but because I talk to many people, like professors in artificial intelligence. I had Patrick Launer on the first episode, and he's a very big expert, and he's very pro AI. So what I think he would say is that people that are opposing or proposing this EU AI Act would be against innovation and ultimately are harming the economic prosperity of Europe, and then eventually just would be so behind that they eventually would just die. I don't know, just being very extreme here. So how would you respond to an argument like that, I guess?
Well, I think this is actually the platitude that's circulating all around. Everybody's saying that the AI EU the EU AI Act is stifling innovation. But let's be honest, we just don't want any kind of innovation. We want responsible innovation that really serves people, not harms people or puts societies at or companies at risk. So that's what I want. I'm probably the most innovative or forward-looking person in terms of AI, and we are not talking. And also, it's not just AI. We have traditional AI and we have Gen AI. Machine learning AI is completely different from generative AI. So we should not mix up all of these things either. We have to be clear about that and very, very nuanced about what we talk about when we talk about AI. So Gen AI is not bringing innovation anywhere further. We also need to analyze a little bit better what innovation means. What does innovation mean? Is it just something new? Is it something that serves somebody or something in a positive way? Because cigarettes were innovation too. And right now we know that they harm enormously human mankind. So there are many things. The nuke, the atomic bomb was an innovation. But was it positive? So we have to really think about what innovation we are talking about. And these concepts of disruption, innovation, competitiveness, and productivity need to be reanalyzed or rethought under the light of new technologies, frontier technologies. That's the thing.
Okay, so because you mentioned the aspects of innovation, so I think right now, and there's different phases of AI. So I think we're still in the task specific, what I call like the task specific AI. So what AI can do at the moment, mostly for the most part, is they can do something really well. Like I don't know, let's say ChatGPT, they can generate text. You might have a robot that can do this, and so you have all these different things, but we're not yet at the general artificial intelligence state. So the burning question for me, and I know this is always looking into the future, is like, okay, so when we eventually get there, because I think we will, I mean, some people might say we won't, what would that look like? If, and that's where the ethics part come in, if people right now don't put in the necessary safeguards to make sure that this doesn't go, off the rail.
Well, when you talk about AGI, there is no definition about AGI. So how do you want to put safeguards around something that you have not even defined yet? Nobody is really thinking or defining AGI the same way. Nobody. Bostrom back in the 90s was talking about AGI. Ray Kurzweil was talking about AGI. They were saying it's 2025, then 2035. Altman, before his next round of seed round, was actually pointing to it's going to happen in 6 months. So what is AGI? And
I was hoping you could tell me.
I certainly can't. I think nobody can. Right. It would be presumptuous and totally fake news to say something like that.
Right.
No, because we have no idea what it is. And then also, John, how can you... Let's be rational for a moment. We are talking about systems here. Mm-hmm. How can a system such as our system actually think about a system which is out of our system? So from a purely logical side, how can we invent something that's not within our system? So AGI, it's more than just cyborgs or transhumanism or uploading conscience or talking to death people. It's much more than that, what they actually are striving for. Mm-hmm. But what exactly it is and how to keep away from it, we have no idea. We have no idea.
But would you agree with that statement? Could we say that if we don't put ethical considerations into developing, even improving our AI, that this could go out of hand at some point? Because like you said, we don't know how it's going to develop. We don't know at what rate it's going to develop. We don't know what the end product will look like. So is that why implementing ethics right now is so important?
Well, why... In general, why is ethics important? Because it is human related. And everything that we produce, we produce it for us here on this planet. So in order to produce beneficially or add something to our humanity, we need to keep, just by anything that we do, we need to keep the human aspect, humanity's insight, and that's ethics. So yes, of course, we can design a general framework which says it shouldn't harm, like the four laws of Asimov in robotics. A robot should not harm, it should obey, and etc. So we can do these things, but once we are there, we need to adapt. It should be adaptable. It should not be carved in stone.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when, because you work a lot in consulting, what happens when you tell people this and you focus on the ethics part and you approach companies, are they saying, no, we don't want to hear this, we just want to know how that works? So what's the response when you stress the human element of AI?
Well, actually, the companies who are our clients, they come because they want that. So the C-level and the executives, the boardrooms, so the upper level decision makers actually want that for their company, for their customers. And so there is no need to explain why it's important, because these companies are the companies who are purpose-driven. These companies are the companies who are inclusive. These companies are the companies who really care about and know. They just come to see us in order to structure it, in order to maybe get help in how to generate money through it, the return on investment aspect, which we do also consider. So we are not philosophers with long tunicas coming in the company, and we do sessions about collective ethics prayers. That's not what we do. We are managers. We have been holding management positions. We have been executives at the House of Ethics. I've been leading departments, teams. So you need to be down to earth with it. And at the end of the day, they want to see a balance sheet. And so that, of course, we know. It's not just floral, ethical chanting.
I don't know if I'm being extremely pessimistic, but when I look at companies, and you know, obviously, you know, in the way they communicate to the outside, they're very, oh, AI is great, you know, we want to implement AI on every level, this and this and that. But I think the reason they think this is so great is because, well, eventually they can just replace people in this position for much cheaper rate. And I think that is what they're actually really, really like about this. Am I seeing this wrong, or are these people actually very human-centered and ethics-based?
Oh, I think you know absolutely well that you're right.
Oh, okay.
And
good.
We call that
it's good to hear that confirmed. Yeah, good.
But we call that ethics washing or virtue signaling.
Virtue signaling, yeah, I heard before. Yeah, yeah.
You see, because it should be in your absolutely for companies. It should be on your website. You should have a code. It should be written. But there are words, and then you have actions.
Mm.
And actually, ethics is about action. It's an actionable philosophy. So it's about decision making. And those companies who just talk about we are ethical and trustworthy, and then at the end you see the results, what happens.
The opposite.
Of course, you are. And then we touch what you have been just talking about in the very first moment when we connected, John, about trust. So, and that's the essential part.
Mm-hmm.
If you lie nonstop about you being ethical, it's not that the people believe your lies, but they are being skeptical about everything you do.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's the part.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the boy who cried wolf. If you just say it all the time and it's not true, people will end up...
Like, well, there's no wolf, and then suddenly...
Because one thing that, particularly for me, is of great interest and really worries me is I think there's just going to be a huge displacement of jobs. I think it's inevitable as this evolves. So how do you see, and how do we as a society, from an ethical perspective, how do we react to that? So how do we adapt to this change in landscape of the job landscape?
I personally think that we should not be alarmed too much about it.
Okay.
Because look, when the second industrialization happened with electricity, first people were... that's a Tesla, Edison, Tesla. People were first, they were afraid, then they were fascinated, and then later on they adopted it, and new jobs were created, new ways of, it influenced everything. It influenced the medicine, it influenced education. So I don't really think that, the good thing about people is that people can adapt. We can adapt. We have the strength and the cognitive strength to understand when we need to change and to adapt. And that's why it's important to talk about systems and not just about products or programs. Mm-hmm. It is really, once you understand how you can add to that system or benefit from that system, it's actually a blessing for you.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many low-paid jobs and so many people who are being totally disregarded in their jobs. If they are replaced by AI and they find a better job in AI, so I don't see why it shouldn't work.
I will give you an example. You say, what if a person who has a low degree job, he can just find a new job in AI. But if he's a truck driver, he's driven trucks for like 30 years of his life. You can't just tell, now why don't you just become a programmer, and that's, I think that's not realistic. So I think for a lot of people, they will not have that option to switch to a different domain that is somewhat related to AI.
Well, if you are a good truck driver or a good cleaner, you just know more than your wheel or your mop. You know about the products, you know about the routes, you know about the truck itself, about mechanics. So, and if this truck driver has a good, let's say, boss or manager, this person will know how to reorient that person and take much more out of him or her than previously. Maybe this truck driver can become a major part by implementing the routes, by implementing internal human structures like the teams, collaborations, or maybe since he was all the time on the route, he knows where to find new opportunities. All these sides of, let's say, workers, operational workers, are never exploited or explored. And that's why you need also sharp people in management positions to see these opportunities for the other people. So it's absolutely not, like you said, it's not, I'm not talking about taking a truck driver and and that he should be the next Sam Altman. That's stupid.
So you think that even if there is a disruption and even if jobs are being replaced by AI, you think that the people that are impacted by this will eventually shift towards a different job or a different domain?
Let's call it upscaling or upskilling. Mm-hmm. It's upskilling. It's not downskilling. That's the thing. What's important to you? Improve people. You augment people, and this is what's going to happen. Upskilling, not downskilling. And it's not necessarily a displacement. We always see it. We leave a sector and go to another sector, but you can also vertically climb the ladder and use your 20 years of experience of a truck driver to improve the company's pertinence on the market.
Yeah, I'm a little more skeptical myself, but I think obviously I can't predict it, but this is just my gut feeling, somewhat intuitive, but also informed by some of, because you mentioned the Industrial Revolution. You said, well, this happened before, right? Industrial Revolution, they all had horses, and then, you know, the Industrial Revolution happened and there were no more horses, and they did other things, which is true. I give you that point, but I think this one is so transformational on so many levels. It's almost like earth-shakingly transformational. So I don't know if people are aware how transformational this is, because I always use this example. When I first used ChatGPT, I think I used it for, and this is only the one example, I used it because my girlfriend at the time, she said, oh, you want to apply there? Why don't you use this? And I was like, all right, let's try it. I don't know. You've never heard of this before. So I tried it and I was like, wait, this is crazy. Like, and so it's just like this will just keep on getting better. Another example is the videos right now. You know, they keep making videos. I mean, at this point, I can still tell when there's a fake video. But in 1, 2, 3 years, I don't think I'll be able to tell anymore if a video is real or it's not. So I think it's just impacting so many different aspects of society that I don't know, or I'm afraid that we might not be able to handle it at some point. Well, or maybe I'm overreacting. I don't know. This is just an overly negative view that I have, I suppose.
No, it's a cautious view. I don't think that you have a negative view. It's a view that that emerges from your questioning. So it's a perfectly valid view. And if we didn't have such views, we could not really talk soberly about right now in which part of the timeline we are right now, at the beginning, in the middle, or have we already reached the end? Certainly not. So, but in order to come back, is what is so transformational about it? It's very transformational because it infiltrates the bias of us humans. It changes our way of thinking. We upload or we even outsource thinking right now. Our behavior is changing too, especially when we are talking about physical AI robotics. We will be completely different with robots than we will be with people, and maybe afterwards we will be the same with people than we are with robots. So our knowledge management capacities will change as well, like you mentioned. What is real, what is truth, what is fake, what are lies. So that's why it is very complex, and I am very grateful that you touched upon it, because right now it is not just a shift, it is a shift, a systemic shift, and that's why it's so different, and that's why we need different approaches to it. And I think that's the most fundamental thing. It's not just a product, it's a system, it's a systemic shift, and we need systemic solutions to it, and it's not another program that's going to save us. It is from multiple layers, multiple people, and that's why I like interdisciplinary approaches.
So you say we need a shift. Is the swarm ethics part of this? Because I found this concept very interesting. Could you touch a little bit upon what you mean by swarm ethics, how it functions in practice, and how it could be applied to the AI space?
Well, first of all, why did we call it swarm ethics? Because it leans on swarm intelligence. And what is swarm intelligence? Swarm intelligence is collective intelligence. And compared to normal ethics, which is completely individual based, swarm ethics is collective ethics. That's the first point. The second point is swarm ethics, since it is relying on us all, not just an individual, it considers people as systems, which means that I can change my behavior or my idea about a norm I had before talking to John or after talking to John. Because exchanging ideas, listening to somebody, talking about things, well, that actually influences our ethical behavior. And that's why the behavioral aspect, the anthropological aspect, is very important in swarm ethics. And that's exactly what we need when we talk about ethics within a company. We need to consider the human element, not just the system. Because after all, it's people who are in charge of systems and who are responsible or accountable at the end of it. And then the third point is that swarm ethics is agile. That's very important because when you talk about the cognitive evolutionary approach to ethics, which is the philosophical part, it is hard-coded. It is top-down, whereas by us, everything or everybody is involved is participatory ethics, and which means that it is very fit for teams. It is very fit for situations that are uncertain. It actually thrives in uncertainty, whereas normal ethics breaks down or is outpaced in uncertainty or by uncertainty.
If I understand this correctly, could you look at this as an iterative process? So it, basically, ethics are formed in conversation with other people. So by talking to each other, interacting with each other, that's how the ethics or the normative ethics are formed. Is that correct?
Yes, because it feeds itself by the new, by the different. That's why it is pluricultural. We like people from different cultures. We like people from with different backgrounds. We like people in a company who has, especially a worldwide company, well, it can absolutely benefit from different points of view. And in swarm ethics, actually, conflicts are positive because we eventually try to find consensus. And even if it's not perfect, you see the swarms in the sky. They always avoid obstacles. Maybe it's not the perfect route, but they avoid it and eventually incrementally adapt. And everybody in the swarm has a responsibility. It's shared responsibility. It's not just the top one who tells you have to do this and that. These are regulations. Ethics is not about regulations. Ethics is about acting, participating, empowering people.
But what if, and I'm going to use an example, maybe, what if there are some bad faith actors with questionable ethical standards? Would they still be able to influence the ethical outcome in such a system, or would they be rooted out by other people? How would that work in practice?
Well, that's a question you really for a scientific answer. Our director of interdisciplinary research, who is one of the best experts in complex systems here in Europe, Dr. Daniele Proverbio, he would tell you that it eventually balances it out. So that's the positive side because it's adaptable. And if you have, of course, one bad apple, it will be balanced out. If you had 80% of balanced bad apples, it cannot be balanced out. So that's, of course, normal, huh? It's not also a panacea to save the world, but it is something what we see where teams are really reinforced. They really feel that they are doing something, adding to the meaning of something, and purposes can be reshaped. And also thinking cybersecurity in terms of resilience in terms of systems that are adaptable, systems formed by people who have real responsibilities, not just responsibilities on paper. Well, that works much better than those who follow the PDF list and the checklist. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work.
Okay, I think I understand your point from earlier now when you said that, well, it's we the people who have to change it. It's not necessarily companies. Yeah. So it's a decentralized system, essentially what it would be, right?
Absolutely. And the decentralization is very important because when you have top-down approaches or a big database or one who is deciding for you, mm-hmm. you might not be happy with it. But if it's decentralized, you maybe have to give up something, but at the end, you gain much more. It's about really compromising and finding consensus. And decentralized is that a lot of different parts can add to the flourishing of the entire system. That's why we have now federated learning, we have blockchains, all these architectures right. are decentralized. Mm-hmm. Why are they decentralized? In order to prevent, let's say, loss of control, in order to prevent
corruption.
Exactly. Yeah. Voila. So if one chain just switches off, the entire system doesn't switch off. It mm-hmm. still is able to function. And that's exactly what you can do in an ethical setting, where every single station, or let's call it people leverages, or like lighthouses, ethical lighthouses, where they are empowered. And they feel really that they have a mission. Mm-hmm. But only if you understand it.
What do you mean only if you understand it?
Because it's not a list, it's not a PDF list, it's a process that we have gone through in order to explain what transparency means, what interoperability means, what explicability means, and what does it entail on my personal level as a worker in a company, mm-hmm. what do I have to do in order to make my work more responsible, more transparent, more interoperable, more accountable. That's what it means. And look, when Microsoft, when they fired their ethics safety department, immediately other departments said, now, who is going to explain to us what we have to do? Mm-hmm. It's about communication. It's not right. just, you know.
The reflex answer, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's not just about maybe, and that's where alignment comes in. Because maybe responsibility for you means something different than responsibility for me. Responsibility for marketing and sales is different from responsibility from project management, different from human resources, different. So we need to find alignments and we need to find ourselves within it. That's why communication is important. That's why management is important. And that's why interdisciplinary ethics, that what we do, business, compliances, IT, very much IT, because we are talking about IT, but mm-hmm. also people management.
So what would you tell a person, if you could give an individual advice, how could they implement an ethical perspective, or how could they interact in this, like you said, ever-increasing complex system? What can the individual do? Because sometimes, a lot of times it feels that we feel like we don't have any power, mm-hmm. You know, and it feels mm-hmm. overwhelming. So what mm-hmm. advice would you give someone that would come to you and ask that question?
I think the first thing to do is to inform yourself. Mm-hmm. Because only by knowing things, you know, I was invited by a major network here in Luxembourg on an interview. And it was broadcasted throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And after that, and I said, I was talking about ChatGPT, and I said, well, people should be aware that ChatGPT is stealing our data. Mm-hmm. After that, I got so many calls, so many emails, so many reactions from people. Oh, you need to talk about this. We didn't know that. Why is nobody telling that? Why is nobody informing us? How is that possible? And I think there is a big gap about information, just basic information. I'm not talking about business information. I'm talking about plain language, telling people what you put in the box stays in the box. Be mm-hmm. careful. And then this is for anybody just outside on the street. But if you are a lawyer, if you are a doctor, and you are bound to confidentiality, well, you need to be triple times more cautious. So these are the things that we need to communicate about. And to be honest, why did this interview have such a resonance? Because people are avid. They want such information, but they don't. They are not giving it. And that, I think, information is very important, because then you can choose if you want to use it or not. And say that, oh, Meta is stealing our data. Meta has been stealing data since Cambridge Analytica. That's their business model.
So just to close off the conversation, so what would your ideal, like, if you look into a crystal ball, what would your ideal world look like in 10 to 20 years? I would assume it's not OpenAI you know, stealing more data, but I think it would probably look differently.
Oh my, John, you are. This is like a major question, because I cannot even say what
the
life looks
like. I open with a major and I close with a major.
In 10 hours, you are asking about 10 years. So to be honest, I have no idea. This is like pure science fiction. So we should rather ask Asimov. He would be very well in answering that question. But what I can say, I can talk about hopes. That's what we can
do. Okay, let's do that. What would you hope for?
Yeah, I will hope for that people gain more trust in themselves than in systems.
Okay.
Because when you have a solid basis of trust in yourself, you can assess the system much better. And trust is not a pop-up. Trust is a process. And companies should know that. They have, that's a marathon. It's not just about talking about trust, it's about acting. It's about everyday behavior. It's about what you do, how you treat people, your customers, your staffers. Once again, I will not close with a system. I will close on humanities, because that's what ethics is about. It's about empowering people. It's about trusting in people. It's about collaborating together. It's about sharing knowledge together, in order to augment, improve, and increase. And I have to thank you so much, John, for giving me the opportunity to express sometimes a little bit of a dissenting view.
Yeah, but I'm very much with you. So thank you very much for coming on. It was very interesting. I think it is very important to have people that take the ethical component serious. And like you said, it shouldn't just be something that is overlooked or just like topping on a cake, I think, as you know, but it should be baked in. It should be integral to everything we develop and how we interact in society. So I think you had some really fascinating perspectives. So thank you very much.
John, may I just ask one little thing at the end?
Absolutely, whatever you want.
I really would like to stress also the fact that ethics needs to be independent.
In what sense?
In what sense that ethical labs cannot be founded by Google, by Meta, by any big tech company. Because, of course, it taints a little bit the ethical purity. We need to be, when you talk about ethics, the only master on board is ethics. It's not money. So, and that's
and
very
that's what
important.
The challenging, that's what the challenging part is, I guess.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
But it is needed. And that's why we can speak up. That's why we can ask sometimes questions that are a little bit frictionable. But we need to do it in order to move on for innovative, or let's say, a sustainable and responsible innovation.
Awesome. Well, keep up the good work. I think it is really very important what you do.
Oh, thank you very much,
thank
John.
You
and
so
you
much.
Too.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.